a very warm welcome to what is our seventh podcast brought to you by the North of Scotland Parkinson's Research Interest Group. And I'm thrilled that you're joining us today. And on the call today, we've got Helga, my partner in crime, who's been involved with all the other podcasts. But we're very grateful to hear today to have Professor David Dexter. We have a huge list of questions, and Helga and I put a call out on Twitter, and we're really excited to see that we got questions from all over the UK, but particularly we're excited because we got a question to put to Professor David Dexter from South America. So today we are thrilled to have Professor David Dexter, and congratulations, who is now the Research Director at Parkinson's UK. So congratulations on that. Helga's far more eagle-eyed than me and noticed that promotion on the website. So that is absolutely fantastic. Congratulations to you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Julie. That's, it's fairly recent news. So I'll be sort of running all the sort of research side of the charity's operations, and Arthur Roach will now be director of the Virtual Biotech. And so we want it to expand all of our charity activities here.
As usual, Helga and I have collated a range of questions to ask you, and I suppose I'm just going to kick off with the first one, which really is quite a broad question in relation to what are the current Parkinson's UK research priorities? And perhaps if you could just talk us around how these priorities were established and published.
Yeah, so the strategy, which is accelerating research breakthroughs, is actually quite broad. And it's deliberately kept broad because really what we want to be doing is still funding that fundamental basic sciences, you know, which give us new knowledge as to what causes Parkinson's. But what we want to do is accelerate the translation of those findings into developing better treatments and cures for people with Parkinson's. So this includes not only drug and therapies, but recently we've branched out and had specific funding calls for apps, gadgets, and technology, which can bring, you know, relief to some of the challenges that people with Parkinson's face every day, whilst we're actually developing those drugs for cures. And also we target both symptomatic therapies, so both treating the motor symptoms, but also non-motor symptoms like anxiety, depression, as well as developing those treatments which are going to slow down Parkinson's. So it covers a broad range of research, really.
So how much is Parkinson's UK spending on research every year then?
Yeah, it's difficult to quantify because, like for this year, we won't know until we've done all our grant schemes and things. So once that's signed off, so generally in the region of about 8.5 upwards to about £10 million a year. So, but it's better to actually look at what our current grant portfolio is. So obviously, once you've funded a grant, it will run for many years. So currently we've got 37 active grants, and that's a total of 12 million. And then we've got seven virtual biotech projects running with a value of 22 million. And so that gives the value of the portfolio of active projects of about 35 million, you know, which is good going for a small charity.
Can you just describe for us, we hear so much about virtual biotech these days. What actually is virtual biotech?
Yeah, the virtual biotech was conceived by Arthur Roach in 2017 when he joined the charity. And really, yes, the name is a bit mysterious, but really what we're trying to do here is really accelerate the research breakthroughs and actually develop better treatments and cures. So what we're doing is taking, you know, the brightest and best scientists from around the world. So for this funding stream, it's not just restricted to the UK. And we're putting in larger amounts of money into these projects and running them towards industrial standards. And so that we can actually help them progress at a faster rate so they can get into clinics and help people with their Parkinson's. So it's virtual because we don't have any buildings or any scientists of our own working on these projects. And those are the expensive things. So what we do is work with other partners, you know, that have research facilities that can actually do the work. So that's where the word virtual comes from. So we don't have any of those extensive facilities of our own.
Well, that's good to hear. We have heard so much about the virtual biotech, and it's good to hear. And maybe we should get Arthur Roach on the call so he could give us some further detail rather than putting you on the spot, David.
Yeah, so recently we've had two really good pieces of news from the virtual biotech. So one of the ones which is in the clinic was Neurelixir's project. So this was looking for a new drug to treat dyskinesias, which was a big unmet need in Parkinson's. So recently they had a phase two study that read out very positively. So that was excellent news. And so that's going to move on now to a larger study. And also NRG Therapeutics, which was one of the companies that we did some seed money in initially. You know, that has grown from some of the funding, additional funding that we put in. And they've recently been very good at getting a Series A funding of about £18 million, of which Parkinson's UK contributed to Lineate. So that has really grown well and is progressing well. So, you know, there are six phase two projects, six preclinical and one phase three, but the virtual biotech is really progressing well.
At the beginning of our podcast series, we heard from the two Aberdeen clinicians, Dr. McLeod and Council, who are both involved in research. As clinicians and kind of frontline medical staff are becoming more and more busy and there's more pressure on them, has there been a downturn in research applications simply because frontline medical staff have a lot of time now to carry out research?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And it's a little bit difficult for us to judge because we get applications in from both basic sciences and, you know, researchers and from clinicians. So sometimes it's not immediately clear, you know, whether they are a frontline clinician, but certainly, you know, we've been told that their time is, you know, much under pressure from their other NHS duties. So they do say that they have got less time to write applications. So we know that it is having an impact, but it's a bit difficult for us to say how much of an impact it's having.
Can you talk us through what actually happens when an application arrives with Parkinson's UK? What's the process after that?
Yeah, so we normally open up the round. So we advertise it on our website. We always advertise it through our social media and also through our newsletter signups. And so we have a pre-proposal round for all grant applications now. So then the pre-proposals are reviewed. And then for those applications that we think, you know, are really strong, we invite them to a full application stage. So there is some triaging of applications at that point. And then from the full applications, again, we triage them. So we'll get reviews both from our College of Experts. So we set up a new system many years ago. And so we've got experts that are in basically our college, our wide sort of, you know, they're a pre-warmed up pool of experts within the field, right from nursing all the way through to genetics, that help us review our grant applications. But also we use people with Parkinson's and affected by Parkinson's in our grant reviewing as well. So their review scores are used to actually do the triaging. So we'll triage the grants that actually go on to the panel review. And then the panel will actually assess and discuss them. And then the panel will make a recommendation to the charity to fund a number of the applications that have come in. So, you know, what we try and do is try and turn these around as quick as possible. But what we need to do is give them enough time to the reviewers to have a professional look about A, whether they're suitable and whether they're really going to be effective at changing the dial in Parkinson's research, or whether they're really cutting-edge research. So both the lay and the scientific reviewers, you know, have an equal weight in assessing whether a grant gets funded.
You mentioned just then lay reviewers. Can you just tell us a little bit about that? and particularly interesting for us as a research interest group?
Yeah, so these are people who volunteer. So they're either people with Parkinson's or people affected by Parkinson's. So they volunteered to actually review applications. So there is a training course for people who want to review the applications. So if I give you an example of a project grant when it comes in, what we may have is about six or seven lay reviewers who will review the application, and their scores are taken together, and then one person will represent that group at the panel meeting. So also, particularly for our non-drug approaches grant scheme, you know, we really rely quite heavily on our lay reviewers, because they're the experts. They know whether this app, this device, or this new program that we're designing will actually be beneficial for people with Parkinson's. So particularly within the non-drug approaches, they do play a very big role in assessing the grants. And so we're always looking for new people who want to volunteer for looking at the grant applications.
When you're reviewing the grant applications, what are you looking for that makes it a successful grant?
Ah, the golden nugget of, what makes a successful application. So, you know, they must have a good idea. You know, it must be cutting edge, the idea, and it's really going to change our knowledge about Parkinson's, or, you know, if it's in the realms of developing a drug, it must be cutting edge research. But really what we want is international level research. So, you know, all our reviewers are looking to say, you know, is this internationally competitive? You know, are the researchers who are submitting the application the leaders in the field? You know, are they the best people for actually doing the work? And also, we assess the team as well. They need to have the team, you know, that's capable of delivering the project, you know, and they must have experience in actually delivering projects. Otherwise, you know, we'd be wasting our money. So really what we also look for is to say to people, you know, it must be, you know, simple, clear, and deliverable. And that's really what we're looking for in those applications. And also, you know, because they're being read by people with Parkinson's as well, on the lay information section, you know, it must be written in a way in which the lay reviewers can actually digest the information. So you've not only could be convincing the scientists that you're a stellar group for doing this project, but also you've got to write it in a way that people affected by Parkinson's can actually understand your application as well.
What are the biggest challenges in research today?
I think some of the biggest challenges, I could probably give you about, three of them are key ones. One of them is our animal models. Parkinson's just affects humans. You know, you don't drive down the motorway and see a Parkinson's cow in the field. So we've only got the brains of people affected by Parkinson's to look at to see what's going wrong. And so when we generate a model in an animal, a Parkinson's model, it doesn't exactly replicate what you see in humans. And so that represents a challenge about whether these models are predictive about how good the drug is going to be when it gets to clinic. So until we get that perfect model, you know, there is a challenge in actually using them in predicting which drugs are going to be effective or not. One of the other challenges is actually predicting who is going to develop Parkinson's. So, you know, the earlier that we can get these neuroprotective drugs into patients, the better it is, you know, the more chance you've got of actually rescuing the nerves. And if we can detect people, you know, before they've started developing the clinical symptoms, you know, then you've got a real chance of actually preventing the onset of the clinical condition. And the work that we've been doing with the Michael J. Fox Foundation in Parkinson's Canada on identifying a new biological staging Parkinson's and using an alpha-synuclein seeding assay to detect people before they have clinical Parkinson's is, you know, some way on the road to developing prevention trials. And I suppose the final challenge is really getting enough people to volunteer for clinical trials, because we're at that point at the moment where we've got so many exciting therapies coming through, we just need more people to volunteer. And there is, you know, something for people at whatever stage of their Parkinson's there is. There's drugs, you know, for people with advanced Parkinson's as well as for people who've just been newly diagnosed. So the challenge is getting enough people into trials.
With the pressure on everybody's finances at the moment, has that changed your funding strategy at all? Is it doing anything like perhaps encouraging more collaboration, or is there perhaps more work going into repurposing drugs? Is it changing the strategy?
Now, I think because Parkinson's UK has been going for 54 years now, and so, you know, it's developed a very robust funding strategy. So even during COVID, you know, we weren't too badly affected by the pandemic. And so, you know, the old saying of not to put all your eggs in one basket. So, you know, we look for funding from a variety of sources. So there's legacies, individual giving. You know, we approach trusts and other charities for funding. So whilst there has been some effect of the cost of living impact on people, you know, giving individual donations, you know, our legacies have actually, you know, been very strong this year. And I think the charity has had the largest legacies that's been left in somebody's will this year, you know, throughout the charity's history. So, you know, whilst one bit of the fundraising may be dipping down, other areas of the charity's and fundraising activities have been picking up, you know, the slack there. But it is a worry. And, you know, regarding collaborations, we always do look for collaborations. You know, on the Neurelixis drug, which I mentioned, which was a virtual biotech project a few minutes ago, we did that in partnership with the Michael J. Fox Foundation. So again, we can halve the cost. We can, you know, then put money into other projects by working with other partners. So wherever we can, you know, we'll look to work with other charity funders.
Earlier on in our podcast series, we spoke to Alan Main, who is a former global president of Bayer Pharmaceuticals. And we spoke to him about research within the pharma industry, which he himself acknowledged is quite a controversial area. What are your thoughts on pharma's hand in research?
Yeah, I think, they've had a bit of bad press. But I think we really need to take a pragmatic approach here to it. You know, they are essential partners in drug development. So even if we have a drug that runs through the virtual biotech, you know, in order to get it into the hands of patients, it takes hundreds of millions of pounds to do that. And as a charity, we don't have that deeper pocket. So you have to partner with pharmaceutical companies in order to get those final stages of development. Our way of working is to actually work closer with the pharmaceutical partners to ensure that we get the best deal for people with Parkinson's. So what we want them to do is actually develop more drugs, potentially treat people with Parkinson's. And in fact, we've had a very good collaboration with UCB, where we've had volunteers from Parkinson's UK, but also the Parkinson's Foundation in America, and we've been helping them to develop a new patient-reported outcome, and that will help us develop, you know, better clinical trials. But since they've seen the impact of involving people with Parkinson's in their research, they've now formulated a patient council. So people with Parkinson's are actually sitting on patient councils, and also Roche have developed a similar one recently. So they're there advising the pharmaceutical companies, you know, where they want drug development to go. So the thing is to, you know, it's necessary to work with them. And the closer that we work with them, the better we can get a deal for people with Parkinson's.
Something that I think Parkinson's people probably grumble about behind the scenes is that they often feel the pharmaceutical companies And research in general seems to always focus on things like the cancers, where we hear lots about cancer, we hear lots about cardiovascular disease, and Parkinson's is a popular disease. Do you find that it's a challenge for research and getting message across and making Parkinson's research attractive?
Yeah, I think if you look at the numbers of people affected by Parkinson's compared to the number of people affected by cardiovascular disease, you know, the market is bigger. So pharmaceutical companies can, you know, make back their research investment much quicker. And also the clinical trials in Parkinson's are much longer. You know, quite a lot of the cancer clinical trials are short term, cancer often progresses quite quickly. And so you can get quick readouts about whether your drug is being effective or not. Whereas in Parkinson's, you know, you may need to test a drug, you know, for 2 years before you know whether it's got any effect of slowing down Parkinson's. So there is a lot of caution from the pharmaceutical company about running drug development programs in Parkinson's, because it is, you know, quite a slow process, and there is a lot of failure when you're running those trials. So I can understand, you know, people with Parkinson's frustration there, but you know, there are some reasons behind it. But hopefully, you know, we know a lot more about what's causing Parkinson's, which is encouraging them, you know, a lot more of the pharmaceutical companies to get in the game of developing new drugs. So there is more and more drugs being developed by pharmaceutical companies now than there ever has been for Parkinson's. And a lot of those are actually tackling slowing Parkinson's, you know, rather than just treating the symptoms.
So there were some of the challenges along with recruiting a large sample, and that was some of the challenges. What do you perceive are some of the opportunities for Parkinson's research in the next sort of 5 years? Where are the new exciting areas of research? Where do you think they're going to be?
Yeah, I think the new areas of research is the potential prevention trial. You know, we've always, you know, just talked about treating Parkinson's when somebody has a clinical stage condition. You know, whereas now with the new biomarkers, you can detect somebody who's got a very high risk of developing Parkinson's years before they actually develop a symptom like a tremor or a stiffness or a slowness at movement. So, you know, that raises the possibility of actually putting drugs into people that don't have clinical Parkinson's at the moment, but they've got a risk of it. But there you've got the possibility then of saying, well, we could potentially stop that person from potentially developing Parkinson's. So that's, you know, one of the really exciting sort of areas of research, because, as I mentioned before, you know, when you develop symptoms like slowness of movement or tremor, you probably lost about 70% of your dopamine-producing cells. And if we can get those drugs into the brain much, much earlier, you've got a potential of actually stopping Parkinson's in its tracks, you know, even before the symptoms develop. So that's some of the really exciting areas. And that's all around the new biomarkers that are being developed to detect people who've got a really high risk of developing Parkinson's.
Has there been any real red herrings in research? Any roads that perhaps people have gone down that were initially looked very promising that have actually turned out to be a dead end?
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, a very good question. But I think it's, yeah, that is the nature of research. So you come up with a hypothesis, you test it, and you find that some of it does lead to a dead end. So there has been, you know, a number of areas of drug development. But the thing to remember about this is it all educates us about, you know, the process that's going wrong in Parkinson's. So even these studies which have failed have really given us a good idea about why, you know, that particular target or that particular mechanism, you know, is not a good one to actually look at. And for some of these drugs that's failed, it may be that we're not putting them in early enough. So even some of these drugs which have been shown to fail, if you actually put them in earlier on in the disease process, you know, they may even be effective. It may be we're just choosing the wrong sort of people to put them in. Yes, there will be some that are total failures, but all of it is like an educational process. So even the failures tell you more information. And so all the, you know, all the failed trials, if we're putting them into a model at the moment through the Critical Path for Parkinson's project, and then we're creating a computer simulation platform. And so you'll be able to test your ideas about whether a particular drug trial has got a good chance of failure or success. So even those failed trials are contributing to sort of tomorrow's science, really. You know, they'll help us inform about what are the good trials to run, what are bad trials, and if they're going to fail, where are they going to fail? So even those failed trials are really helping us quite a lot, really.
I suppose that because Parkinson's is so different in different people, you know, all the motor symptoms, all the non-motor symptoms, it must be a difficult disease to research. Is it one disease, or do you think it is a number of diseases?
A couple of weeks ago, I was in New York. So the Michael J. Fox Foundation were running a session on biomarkers. And so one of the sessions was looking at that very topic. And there was a project using AI or artificial intelligence, you know, or machine learning, as some people call it, and looking at large data sets. And, you know, using AI, they will be able to see three different subtypes of people with Parkinson's, you know, with a very clear sort of progression of symptoms. And so there were these cohorts of people in these individual symptom brackets of Parkinson's, really. So I think it's one disease that's triggered by, you know, the bad protein alpha-synuclein, but the course, the way that it runs through different people, you know, may mean that it, you know, has a different trajectory in one person compared to another. But really, we could actually utilize, you know, those differences to actually make more focused drug trials. So this AI approach was able to identify the three subtypes of Parkinson's. So we could do, you know, what's called, you know, personalized approach to therapies and say that, you know, your Parkinson's has this particular phenotype and we feel that this type of drug would be the best one to test. So we could be getting close to what they've been doing in cancer for many years, is actually trying to do a personalization approach to therapy, you know, rather than a one-size-fits-all sort of approach.
The million-dollar question is, if somebody has asked who's been diagnosed in their 30s, and you have touched on this throughout the pod, what sort of things are coming along that may help slow down the progression of Parkinson's?
Yeah, it is really quite an exciting time in research. I use the analogy of about doing research. It's like doing a 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, but your friend hasn't given you the lid with a picture on. So, you know, everybody's done jigsaw puzzles. So what you do is the straight edges first, and that's the slow and boring bit. You know, and that's what we've been doing over the last, you know, four decades. But as you know, with a jigsaw puzzle, when you start to see the picture emerging, you can put the pieces down faster. And that's the exciting stage that we're at the moment. More and more drugs are coming down the pipeline. So Kevin McFarthen, who is a person with Parkinson's, he writes an article every year. So he screens all of the databases of trials that are running. And he identifies all of them which are in phase one, which is the first in demand type thing, all the way up to phase three. So they're the closest that a drug gets before it gets approval and into the hands of people with Parkinson's. You know, and just from last year's paper that he wrote, you know, there is a doubling of the number of drugs which are in phase three. So last year, there was three drugs. So this year, there are six drugs in phase three. We've just jointly funded a phase three study on Ambroxol with Cure Parkinson's and a number of other funders. So that's seven drugs going into phase three studies. So it's a really exciting time. There are drugs there, you know, waiting to be tested. So in the past, we said, oh, in the next 5 years. But these drugs are available now, so that people can actually take these really novel therapies that have got good potential of slowing Parkinson's then and now. So it's just a really exciting time.
To hear such optimism from someone, you know, like you, who's really in the centre of it all, it's really good news.
Well, it's lovely to chat to you, and I'll keep listening to the podcast myself.
Thank you for allowing us to finish this pod on such a positive note. Thank you very much, Simon.